This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time 1203. Great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. We'll take a deep dive into the Peloton situation coming up in our next segment. Right now, let's look at today's data on jobs, the service sector, and rising lumber prices. We're joined by Gus Fauché, chief economist at PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Gus, let's begin with the private payroll number from ADP. Kind of give us a thumbnail sketch of it and what you make of it.
So ADP reported that the private sector added more than 700,000 jobs in April. That's the best number since September. And that bodes very well for when we get the official government jobs report on Friday. So I think April was a very good month for the U.S. labor market, and the next few months ahead are likely to be very good as well.
And what do we need to really get the economy, I guess, back to pre-pandemic levels? I'm going to guess it's several months of significant job growth.
That's right. I mean, we're still down by 8 million jobs from where we were before the pandemic. So we have a lot of lost ground to make up. But the good news is it was stimulus payments, with people getting vaccinated and feeling more comfortable going out with schools reopening, all those types of things. We should see very strong job growth through the rest of this year and into 2022.
Are we able yet to dig down into the numbers? Maybe it's too early, but to see, are these job gains widespread among industries? Are there certain industries that are maybe ahead of others?
We're seeing a lot of hiring, not surprisingly, in leisure hospitality services, so restaurants, entertainment, hotels, that type of thing. Obviously, we had enormous job losses in that industry, so we're starting to see it come back as people feel more comfortable going out and going to a restaurant or going on vacation.
Let's talk about this lumber shortage. I've been just absolutely fascinated by this, as I've talked with a lot of builders who say they have to price new homes way above what they did just 6 months ago or a year ago. Sometimes the customers think they're playing games with the numbers, but they're not. It's real. Lumber's expensive these days.
That's right. Very strong demand for lumber right now. New home sales are very high. Housing starts are very high. So we're putting up huge numbers of homes. At the same time, we're seeing some sawmills that were closed. We have tariffs on imports of lumber from Canada, so that's restricting supply. So it's going to take some time to even out. I do think that we will see more supply. I do think that high prices will deter some home building. But right now, the high lumber prices are a real constraint on stronger growth in the housing industry.
And turning that around, I mean, some people go, well, you know, there's a lot of trees out there. Why don't you cut some more down? But it's just not as simple as that.
That's right. You need to have the capacity at the sawmills. And in particular, I think a lot of Canadian producers are reluctant to make the investment necessary until they're sure that we won't see higher tariffs on imports from Canada to the United States.
Thank you so much for all of the analysis. That is Gus Fauché, chief economist at PNC Financial Services. Just ahead, a major treadmill recall by exercise equipment maker Peloton. A major recall is underway involving exercise equipment maker Peloton. It's calling back two entire treadmill models, the Tread Plus and the Tread, following reports of numerous injuries and at least one death. The stock getting hit today, $82.65 a share. That is down 14.5%. Let's get some more details now about what's going on with Peloton. Landon Luxembourg is here, senior analyst at Third Bridge in New York City. Landon, good to have you on the show. What can you tell us?
Thanks for having me on, Cisco. Definitely an unfortunate timing for Peloton right now. There was an anticipated release of their treadmill product May 27th. This is likely a risk at this point. And obviously, as the economy reopens, there's going to be a lot of options for consumers to address their fitness needs. So it is definitely not the best time for this sort of recall to happen. You know, we're seeing, of course, people that frequented boutique fitness also having that as an option again. And heightened consumer scrutiny will definitely be a major risk for Peloton going forward.
And is this something where they literally just take the treadmills back? I mean, people are shipping them back to Peloton. I mean, how do you even do a recall like this?
It will definitely take a lot of there are definitely a lot of moving parts to this. One possibility is a full refund. But likely for those that do want the product out of their homes, Peloton will likely have to take it back and address it somehow. Clearly, there is a bit of reconfiguration and design engineering that has to be undertaken on that front. But right now, their biggest concern is really negative press around the issue at stake.
So going forward here, does Peloton have to figure out how to modify these? I'm thinking that's what automakers sometimes do, is they come up with a fix around it, or do they just go back to the drawing board in designing these treadmills?
One of two things. So they could likely have some sort of software lockout, so maybe some sort of software update, further integrating some of the safety features that already do exist in or are in place. Or likely some physical guard that will prevent any sort of incidents going forward. Obviously, with the treadmill not yet released, they can address that right away. But with the Tread Plus that were already in consumers' homes, likely the easy quick fix would be some sort of software push if possible. But it seems like the physical solution might be the more feasible one at this point.
And they probably have to deal with government regulators too. Whatever the fix is, they can't just put it out there. They have to deal with the feds and make sure they're okay with it.
That is correct. The Consumer Product Safety Commission, actually, they're the ones that basically put out the warning for consumers. And of course, this obviously scrutinized Peloton for these safety features. Originally, they had said a recall was not in at stake, but now obviously they've looked at it again and said, okay, now we really do need this to be recalled. And again, it's getting a lot of negative press, so definitely not good for them at this point.
Especially, and you touched on this at the beginning, especially given the fact that with the pandemic, so many people have been buying their products to work out at home.
That is correct, and there's a flurry of competitors coming online as well. We have Echelon with wide distribution at Dick's Sporting Goods, at Costco. We have Icons Nordic Track as well. So there are a lot of options coming online. You don't just look to Peloton anymore for those sorts of products. You can now find them at a wide range of different price ranges, and of course, you can pick them up yourself from a Dick's Sporting Goods. You don't have to wait on Peloton any longer to deliver it to your home.
Thanks so much, Landon Luxemburg, senior analyst at Third Bridge in New York City. Again, Peloton stock getting hammered today, down about 14.5%.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Cryptocurrencies are all the talk among investors these days, but has the market gotten a little frothy? Joining us on the McGrath-Lexus Business Line, Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital here in Chicago. He's the author of the book Calculated Risk. Michael, always good to talk with you. I mean, it seems like some of these cryptocurrencies are rising double digits every day. Does that mean that people should be wary of them?
Well, good afternoon, Cisco, and thanks for having me on. I mean, that is a characteristic of a panic buying situation, but it also could be a characteristic of just something that was undervalued and people are starting to realize there is value here. Which is it? You know what? You'll have to wait and see, to be honest with you. I'm not sure. There are certainly some of these coins that are flying up right now are going to end up going to zero. I mean, there's thousands of different altcoins out there, and some of them most of them are going to end up being worth zero. But you look at some of these returns. I mean, I'm looking at 6-month returns on some of these coins. Dogecoin, 200x, meaning it's gone up 200 times its value in 6 months. That's basically the equivalent of taking a startup company and going public which usually takes 10 years to do. That's the kind of return you'd get if you managed to be able to do that. Dogecoin did it in 6 months. And even in the last month, you look at some of these coins, they're up 10x in Dogecoin. Ether's up 50%. Litecoin's up 80%. Interestingly enough, Bitcoin is flat in the last month. So what it appears to me is that a lot of the Bitcoin profits, people are taking some profits and they're buying down the line here some of these altcoins that, that maybe are cheaper on a dollar basis and maybe have, in their minds, they have better upside. So that seems to be what's happening right now is people are rolling out of Bitcoin and into some of these other altcoins.
Well, because what they're thinking is, you know, Bitcoin, it's not necessarily going to be up double digits anytime soon. But if you can buy some of these other coins for pennies, they're thinking it's much easier then to make 50, 60, 100, 200%.
Right. And so a lot of these coins now are tradable on Robinhood and other ways that, you know, a year ago were not possible. So now you can... You know, you can buy and sell Dogecoin on Robinhood, and so that's why, you know, the accessibility is there, and it wasn't there a year ago. So people can gamble and do what they want with a lot of these coins, and it wasn't possible before. So that's part of what's driving this as well. It doesn't mean these coins are overpriced. I mean, some certainly are, because like I said, most of these coins are going to zero. But some of them are going to be around forever, and they're going to drive a lot of the technological advances going forward. I think Ethereum's a good example with their ability to create NFTs. I mean, that's a hot area, and the number one coin for that is Ether, and so you could make a case for that. And the overall value of all these coins combined is still about $2 trillion. That sounds like a lot of money because it is, but when you compare it to the U.S. stock market, which is $50 trillion, and the value of just gold itself is $7 trillion. So, you know, all these coins combined, certainly Bitcoin is half of that value of $2 trillion. Bitcoin's $1 trillion. You know, you can make a case that these things still could run a lot more. It's just you wonder when is there going to be a pause. And how bad is that downturn going to be when it does happen?
Thank you so much, Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. There's more to your life's milestones than just birthday cake. We'll talk about it. Personal Finance Wednesday, the end of an era. With just one exception, CME Group is leaving its Chicago doors closed for good. News we're following, former President Donald Trump's Facebook account will remain closed for now. Wall Street, the Dow up 128, the NASDAQ is up 36, and the S&P is up 14 points. Oil is down right about 0.5%. Sunshine throughout Chicagoland, 57 degrees at O'Hare, 51 degrees downtown. Former President Trump's Facebook account will remain closed for at least 6 more months.
I'm Peter King. Facebook's oversight board says former President Trump's accounts there and on Instagram will stay suspended for now because of comments he made that violated the site's standards and fueled the Capitol riots January 6th. The board found Mr. Trump's words to rioters, quote, legitimized their violent actions, but it also found that Facebook acted inconsistently with its normal standards for suspending accounts because there was no time limit. Co-chair Michael McConnell.
It must either restore Mr. Trump's account, finding that the period of suspension has met its purpose, make the suspension permanent, or suspend the account for a determinate period of time.
It's given Facebook 6 months to complete a review. Peter King, CBS News.
The CDC's rental eviction moratorium is in trouble. The order froze evictions last year. It would have left many renters on the streets. Now a federal judge has ruled the CDC exceeded its authority. The decision is a win for a coalition of property owners and realtors. It's not clear whether the government will appeal. A reminder, Audacy is your new home for all the audio that matters to you. Download the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y, and listen to WBBM anytime.
Money Talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Markets are rising a bit today. The Dow up 131. The NASDAQ is up 39 and the S&P is up 15. Joining us with a look at what's going on Wall Street, Shah Galani, Chief Investment Strategist at MoneyMorning.com. Shah, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
I think it's a worthwhile bounce to take notice of after what happened yesterday. Cisco, what we saw obviously was talk of rising interest rates out of Janet Yellen, and that sort of, I believe, misplaced conversation that she had in front of a public audience set the markets a little bit on fire yesterday. We seem to be calming down today, so we'll see how we close. But it was scary yesterday in terms of the NASDAQ falling more than 400 points, just shy of 3%, recovering for reasonable loss of, down 1.88%. But, a little bit of a dead cat bounce here today, but hopefully we can close stronger and get back to marching higher as we were before this dust up once again over rising rates.
Are we waiting for some kind of a catalyst? I don't know what it would be, but some sort of a catalyst to really get these markets growing again?
I think the catalysts are there, Cisco. We know we've got stimulus money floating around. We're probably going to have a lot of, infrastructure spending coming down the pike. How long that might take to manifest itself, maybe 6 months, a year, but we know it's coming. And I think markets are looking forward to that. In the meantime, households are in tremendously good shape. Savings rate is the highest on record, and everybody seems to think that as we get increasingly vaccinated and the economy opens up, this economy is going to just continue to not grind but explode higher. So I think that all bodes well for the markets. They're in a place where they just are hopefully getting past some nervousness about rising rates, which we're going to see anyway, and I think they've got room for another leg higher.
Is there concern, it almost sounds silly to talk about now, but an overheated economy, if we get moving too quickly again, this sounds silly because we want to rebound from everything we've dealt with over the past year.
No, I don't think there's much concern about overheated economy unless that leads to rapidly rising interest rates. That's the only real concern that investors have. And I don't think while we're going to see rising rates, I don't think we're going to see rapidly rising rates because the Fed has said that they will do what they have to keep them moderately increasing. They didn't use, that's my word, increasing, because they know that there is inflation out there. They know that the bond vigilantes are going to start pushing rates higher. And as long as it's measured and steady and not crazy, then the markets can handle it and the Fed will do whatever they have to do if it does get out of control. So that's not the market's worry. I think the market's worry is crazy speculation in some areas that could lead to some rapid selling and maybe some margin selling and some kind of negative feedback loop. That's the only prima facie concern I have regarding the markets up here.
As people are looking at investing, any sectors that you believe are poised to do well, at least in the near term?
Energy has done well, and I think it's going to continue to do well. All the talk about EVs notwithstanding, we are still in the age of carbon man, and so we're certainly going to see, I think, rising demand for crude, and we see crude pricing heading towards, as far as WTI, heading north towards 70. I have a 75 call on there by the end of the summer. They may be higher by the end of the summer. So I think energy looks pretty good in here. A lot of these companies have been sold short. The stocks have been pounded. They've risen, and they have, I think, a good bit higher to go. I also love the financials in here. It's part of that cyclical rotation. And I think as long as the economy does well, continues to do well, I think the financials will continue to climb.
What about Peloton? I mean, it's down 14.5% today because of a big recall. Should investors at least be thinking about Peloton?
Yes, as scary as Peloton looks right now, and it looks scary to me because it had been coming down and it just broke support, I'd say probably around 95, and it kind of just really crushed through there. And now at 82, you're a little bit, I'd be a little nervous about getting in, but I think it's a great company. The metrics are fabulous as far as, got tremendous revenues at close to $3 billion, makes good money, has tremendous cash flow, great cash position at over $2 billion, and not a tremendous amount of debt, about $620 million. So it's a well-run company, very profitable, and I think investors should start looking for a spot to get in.
Thanks so much. Shah Galani, Chief Investment Strategist at MoneyMorning.com. Just ahead, preparing for the financial milestones in your life, it's Personal Finance Wednesday.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A reminder, a podcast of the Noon Business Hour, always available at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Odyssey app. Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour. Birthday cakes are time-honored traditions and some of life's most important milestones. But with advancing age, you'll need more than just cake to maintain an adequate quality of life. Joining us on the McGrath-Lexus Business Line, Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. Craig, it's good to have you with us. Let's begin, I guess, with age 50. Maybe we'll move up the ladder here a little bit. At age 50, when someone hits that milestone, what do they need to know and do?
You're right. Birthdays matter when it comes to finance. At age 50, all I think about is it's time to start getting caught up. When I say getting caught up, I'm talking about the ability to contribute more to our 401k plans, put more money into our IRAs. That's what age 50 means for us as retirement savers.
And so that's 50. What about 55? It seems like there are these little age milestones.
Well, there is, and at 55, I want to make sure everybody understands that you're in a position, if you have a workplace retirement plan, aka your 401k, you can start accessing those 401k dollars if you've been separated from service without paying a 10% penalty. Too many people think it's the age of 59 and a half, but with your 401k, it's actually the age of 55.
Oh, wait, so it's 59 and a half, what, that's sort of when you can normally take it out without penalty, 55? If you've been laid off or something like that?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So if you find yourself, I legally call it separated from service, you quit, you're fired, you're retired, whatever it might be, you have access to that 401k beginning at the age of 55. But for everybody else, most people have money in IRAs, IRA rollovers, etc. And for everybody turning the magic age of 59 and a half, that'll be the first age that we can start taking money from both our workplace plans and our IRAs without paying that 10% premature distribution penalty. And in addition to that, if you find that the investment options in your current workplace plan are limiting, at the age of 59 and a half, a lot of people might be able to do an in-service distribution to an IRA, which under the right circumstances could give you more investment flexibility.
Now, help us here, just to make sure it's clear in my brain here. So the difference in withdrawals from a 401k or 403b and an IRA, are there any differences in regard to the penalties? And the reason I'm asking is because some people, over the years, they leave an employer and they roll that money into an IRA. Is that going to affect them at all, or is it pretty much the same rules?
No, so generally speaking, for all 401k plans, all IRAs, the easy statement is you can't start accessing your monies until the age of 59 and a half if you want to avoid that 10% premature distribution penalty. Place retirement plan, aka your 401k, as long as you're 55 or older, which is younger than 59 and a half, you can start tapping that money at that point in time. So the takeaway from this is don't just blindly roll your 401k into an IRA. Depending on your age, there might be a reason to leave some dollars in that 401k plan for accessibility at the age of 55.
That's really interesting. Let's step up the ladder a little bit here. Let's get up to 72 years old. The government at some point wants its money, doesn't it?
Well, they did. And of course, it used to be 70 and a half. You fast forwarded for us. So now it's the age of 72. And at the age of 72, that's when we need to start taking these required minimum distributions from our various retirement plans. And it's important to do the calculation right. It's important to make the withdrawals, because if you fail to take the amount out that the government requires you to, you have to pay a penalty. And Cisco, that penalty is as high as 50%. I don't think anybody wants to take a 50% haircut. So once you hit 72, time those required minimum distributions and calculate those required minimum distributions flawlessly.
Thanks so much for all of the information. That's Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. That's Personal Finance Wednesday. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday. Still to come today, the sun is setting on all but one of the last commodity trading pits in Chicago.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's the end of an era for Chicago's commodity trading pits. After being shut down by COVID last year, CME Group says all but one will remain closed for good. Let's talk about it with Phil Flynn, senior market analyst at Price Group. Phil, you have some experience with these trading pits, don't you?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. You know, more than I like to admit. You know, I started down as a runner on the floor of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange back in 1979. And boy, I still remember the first time I walked down on that floor. It was like you were in a different world. I mean, the amount of people, the activity, the seriousness of people in the trading pits, it was just overwhelming. And it's really a sad day for the city of Chicago to see this coming to an end.
So what happens? I mean, it's just all online. It's just not necessary anymore.
Well, it is, you know, gone electronic. You know, 90% of all the trading is done electronic. There is one pit, the Eurodollar options pit, that is staying in place, which is going to be the last trading pit ever. And they're going to have a little bit of pride in that, right? You know, and they're trading the options, and there's so many option combinations in the Eurodollar, they're able to survive when a lot of them can't. But, you know, when you look at this, this is really a story not just about the trading floor, but the city of Chicago. When you look at that trading floor, you look at the careers that were made, you know, dreams that were made, fortunes that were made, and fortunes that were lost, really tells the story of Chicago. You know, that get-up-and-go spirit, that can-do spirit, that was reflected a lot on those trading floors, and it's kind of sad to see it go.
So the pit that will remain open, what's the benefit to that? I mean, given the fact that you've already mentioned everything is really electronic now.
Well, the Eurodollar futures is short-term interest rates, and it basically trades out years and years and years and years. And because there's so many option combinations, a lot of the traders in the pits make markets. It's almost like they're market makers for the pit. And, you know, and the difference between the trading pits, you know, the trade, you know, computers don't take risk to do a trade, right, to make a trade happen. The trading players in the Eurodollar pit still do, and that's why what's keeping them hanging on when everybody else has gone to the wayside.
Sort of a sad moment, a nostalgic moment, and yet this progress has actually been good for a lot of investors.
It really has been. I mean, there's no doubt that electronic trading is a lot faster. It's changed the way we've done trading, and it's actually opened the door to a lot more investors that were not able to participate in the markets. You've heard of the Reddit crowd, you've heard of these computer guys. A lot of this has happened, and it's changed the way we trade. You know, the way that the people traded when I got into this business in 1979 has dramatically changed. And, you know, a lot of traders knew this day was coming, but make no mistake about it, there's going to be a lot of sadness to see it go.
Sure is. Phil Flynn, senior market analyst at Price Group.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.